Primero quiero agradecer a Genevieve por haber hecho esta conferencia posible y porque ha hecho también posible que nos juntemos todos ustedes y nosotros. Yo creo que todos somos nosotros. Este es un tema que realmente ha existido siempre, pero que lamentablemente hemos sido ciegos todos. I will try to now to increase or incorporate in the conversation, on the GIF conversation, of the environment. I want to see how the environment has been incorporated into the logic of the capitalist system. The title originally has been Sustainable Development and the Creation of Poverty. I just changed it for Enclosure as Conservation and the Creation of Poverty. For many reasons. Okay. The paper develops the premise that enclosure as conservation is another instrument of colonization of the third world and women's work and nature. To achieve this aim, the centers of powers in the industrial world have mobilized an array of institutions and discourses strongly linked with the expropriation of these commons or gifts in the rainforests of indebted countries. A case study I will talk to connects two aspects of this enclosure. The first is enclosure of land in the name of sustainable development that has initiated as a state-led management of biodiversity in conservation areas for extraction of genetic material, mining, ecotourism, and oxygen generator or carbon sink. And the second is the enclosure of women's labor through micro-enterprise for gender equality. It has recasted rural women as organic food producers for a growing number of international consumers, as biodiversity and women's non-wage labor comprise the support system that local communities use for survival, land enclosure for conservation, and micro-enterprise for women's equality have become a war on subsistence and consequently the expansion of poverty. I like to introduce this issue saying that the theories of modernization and economic growth that dominated the economic development discourse in the beginning of the 50s, the beginning of the 50s, still dominate today in sustainable development theory. In the 60s, the discourse of economic development promised elimination of poverty in the third world through different kinds of investment in the economy for economic growth. Poverty was understood as absence of Western consumption patterns, cash incomes, and industrialization. In the 1990s, the discourse of sustainable development assures that globalization of the economy will rescue poor countries from their poverty, even in the most remote areas of the world. Poverty is again the excuse for new assaults on the gifts of these countries. This paper takes up a case study connecting two aspects of the enclosure, or expropriation of land and labor in Costa Rica. The first aspect of the contemporary enclosure this paper addresses is that of land developed in the Arenal Conservation Area of Costa Rica by the World Wildlife Fund Canada. The growth framework used by enclosure for conservation has revived colonization. As local commons are handled by global actors and local concerns are no longer existent. The appropriated land has been manufactured along the lines of national parks in North America, from which people are excluded and deny any role in sustaining their ecosystems. These expropriated land are linked to transnational and political networks in order to forge local and global stakeholders in the era of sustainable development. For this purpose, proponents of the model have portrayed campesinos and indigenous people, indigenous peasants, population as the prime enemies of the rainforest in order to legitimize their exclusion. Michael Goldman reflects on that, and he says that as long as the commons is perceived as only existing within a particular mode of knowing called development, with its unacknowledged structure of dominance, this community, the global resource managers, will continue to serve the institutions of development whose raison d'etre is restructuring third world capacities and social natural relations to accommodate transnational capital expansion. According to Goldman, the global resource managers have replaced the barefoot peasants as the expert on the commons. Now, within the new discourse, it is their knowledge, rules and sciences and definitions that have become paramount for explaining ecological degradation and sustainability. The global resource managers are more concerned with the expansionary demands of the North industrial base than with the health of the ecology. They will make sure that industry gets what it needs, because industrial expansionist projects require more natural raw material extracted from the earth, rivers, forests, as well as cheap labor. The second aspect I will talk is the enclosure of the rural women's labor power, developed again in the arenal conservation area of Costa Rica by the World Wildlife Fund, Canada. As land enclosure takes place and the market system is introduced in rural areas, it has powerful effects on the sexual division of labor, and women's traditional knowledge becomes the value. The specific case involves, again, the World Wildlife Fund, I said, but using the Dead for Nature funds to organize microenterprises all over Costa Rica. In the arenal conservation area, the World Wildlife Fund has organized the Abanico Medicinal Plant, an organic agriculture microenterprise, in collaboration with an NGO from Holland. Although women and development programs argue that microenterprises are organized for gender equity, I will criticize that position. I will say that this framework, I'm talking about the women in development, criticizes the economic failure of development by not recognizing the role of women in productive activities. For instance, we can see that this group had been criticizing the unequal gender outcomes of the stabilization and the structural adjustment programs implemented by the IMF and the World Bank in Latin America and all over the world. They point out that women generally suffer more than men from the restructuring of education and healthcare, from the elimination of state social programs, from the removal of subsidies in the food system, and from high inflation. They propose that macroeconomic policy be engendered in order to curtail differential outcomes for women. Feminists, however, argue that theoretically this group, Women in Development, embraces the standard predictions of neoclassical economic discourse based upon a model which assumes that markets are perfectly competitive with no market participants able to influence the price of any input or output. Consequently, the Women in Development economic discourse, demanding a strong state to remove the constraints that prevent women from reaching their full development and to channel resources to women, is futile and flawed as well as contradictory, since the IMF, the World Trade Organization, the World Bank, and all other international organizations forbid national governments from violating the laws of the market. This paper shows that sustainable development and women and development are connected. Since capital has converted the census world into an abstraction, for the purpose of profit, nature and women come to express alienated ways of being. On the one hand, nature is understood as a source of biotechnology, biopiracy, mining, ecotourism, and oxygen generator of carbon sink producer. On the other hand, rural women get loans to develop biodiversity-related micro-enterprises model for gender equity and environment. The double enclosure of expropriation of biodiversity and of women's productivity and reproductive fertility have become a war on subsistence. This paper also evidences the gift of these communities who, if probably most of you will understand if I say that these communities get their paychecks from the jungle, from the forest. But because hunting and fishing have long been part of the subsistence economy in these communities, almost all farmers were also hunters and fishers. However, since the establishment of the World Wildlife Fund, using the framework of sustainable development, all these things have been closed down. Let's see how is the current land enclosure. In this particular case, I will see an area of 250,000 hectares in which the World Wildlife Fund has organized what they call a land plan. This land has been enclosed for four things. One part is to organize a biopiracy or research centers. The other part has been organized for mining, mainly Canadian mining corporations. The other area is being devoted to ecotourism. And finally, the last area is devoted to sell oxygen under the Kyoto Protocol. I will talk about that. I want to talk about all of them. Since I don't have too much time, but I will try to reduce or resume them. The biopiracy, for instance, from these 250,000 hectares, 116,000 were declared protected areas. Under these protected areas, the World Wildlife Fund has organized 37% of that land has organized for genetic material, for research purposes. There are many projects going on there, especially there are three research organizations. One is an NGO from Costa Rica called INBIO, which is Instituto Nacional de Biodiversidad, which is involved in parataxonomy and chemical prospecting with many pharmaceuticals. There is another group working with the Minister of Environment and Energy. And that minister is organizing a project financed by the World Bank and also by the Netherlands. And the third project there in that place is the World Wildlife Fund project in partnership with the Association Conservationist Monteverde. Both of them collect material and research flora and fauna. This partner has been biopiracing 10 areas. Now, what I'm saying is that they really organize very well for them to be the ones who collect all the profits. Okay. I will continue saying about what is this biopiracy and what are the consequences. First of all, the first thing is that as research centers are organized in the so-called nucleus areas, these areas are declared off limits to rural communities. The newly declared private land is patrolled by 7 park guards who are organized under 1 police control unit, trained in how to handle firearms and equipment and to counter land invasions. When the police control finds community members breaking regulation stipulated in the land plan, this is failing to pay fees or intruding upon privatized space, the park guards confiscate anything the individuals may have obtained on the land, fish or game, whatever tools were used, and then report the offense to the Office of the Public Prosecutor. This is the first thing. The second thing that this, as the snatching of the last remaining biodiversity from local communities who use it to sustain themselves has become a death sentence for subsistence producers and reproducers, these communities are declared criminals and intruders. In separating rainforest people from nature, both the people and the, and the communities of nature suffer from the violation of the rights to interaction. This separation of people from nature has created a sense of disorder, alienation, fragmentation. Not long ago, I think 2 years ago, two of the hunters were burned, one important symbol of Costa Rica. This was, the name is, the symbol is La Casona. This act of subordination, of the insubordination, has revealed their existence because the government has been always saying that there's no truth that the hunting and fishers exist in Costa Rica because Costa Rica is considered the first world and therefore they shouldn't have. There is no hunter, there are no gatherers, no fisheries. But since they burned this monument, the government has to show, to agree that they existed. However, all of them now are in jail because they were protesting against the government that has destroyed their rights. I will jump over the gold mining because I want to run over the Kyoto Protocol, which is important for you to know. Can you please help me? Okay, in the gold mining, we have this protected area for gold mining. Mining in Costa Rica is done through mountaintop removal, which is a technique that denudes huge swaths of forest. It blasts in also produces other environmental damages, such as the filling of headwater stream with soil and taking headwater stream away from the matrix of streams that feeds into large river systems. Because of that situation, for the first time, the local government and communities become linked. All the water have been polluted. Most of the streams are yellow. And if many women have been children with Down syndrome, and that's the area where the government has been saying there is no truth that all these women were saying, listen, we are having children with Down syndrome, and this is the highest rate in this area from the entire country, and the government was saying that was absolutely false. Until the local community, local municipality, for the first time, has linked with the communities. This is the first time that communities and local municipalities are together. In the past, local municipalities were working with the national governments, both of them looking for economic growth. But since the water has been destroyed and most of the people have to move out and the water system is almost completely destroyed, they, for the first time, they are opposing to mining corporations. And we have seen hundreds of mobilizations there, and we also have seen that in that particular area how the corporation has answered with many lawsuits against the municipal workers. One of my friends, Marta Blanco, was taken to the court, and she was accused of lying that the corporation was destroying the water, and also the corporation was destroying the whole forest. And because the corporation argued that they had the permission from the national government, and since that happened, she was the judge told her that she had to pay reparation to the corporation. But a couple of weeks after that happened, luckily this whole movement took the case to the national court, where the national court decided that that was not going further, because as a municipal government officer, she had the right to confront the. Okay. Finally, I will jump over what I want you to know is the Kyoto Protocol. The Kyoto Protocol implies that all the communities, especially the indebted world, have to be part of the Kyoto Protocol to sell the oxygen. But what that means, selling oxygen to these indebted countries? First of all, they have to evict most of the small and medium-sized peasants from the land. They have to evict them. They have been evicting all the small and medium-sized owners, because corporations are moving in to produce all this monoculture of land. They are planting teak, melina, and eucalyptus, because these three kinds of trees are the ones that in the industrial world needs for paper and all that things. And therefore, in order to do that, they have to eliminate the whole biodiversity of entire places. But that is one important thing. But I want also to move farther into the rainforest of the Amazon, where I am from. And I want to let you know that around the Amazon River, or the Amazon area, there are 8 countries that have the whole Amazon. I think they are Colombia, Brazil, Peru, Ecuador, Bolivia, Venezuela. And all of them now are in problems, because the United States want to declare all that area an international zone. But to declare international zone means that they have to lose, first of all, eviction from the land, and secondly, the corporations can have the right to move in for oil mining or any kind of mineral. Unfortunately, I have no more time, and I want to apologize for being so slow in trying to develop all these things. Thank you for listening.